Welcome once again to the Radio Conference Call, a podcast by radio people for radio people, as we catch up with Clem Daniels for part two, KQOT Yakima. Clem, you were quite a puker back then.
I don't know why I was talking weird and funny, but I developed that puking skill even further when I got my first radio job in Yakima, KQOT, KQOT. Very strange radio station, but and I made a whopping, get this, $225 a month.
Whoa.
I know.
I remember getting $225 per paycheck. Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just hard to survive. So, anyway, that lasted 6 months, and then I came back home. All right. So, here's how I got into bigger radio.
All right. Let's hear the path.
This was a transitional point. I'm doing yard work now because I don't know what I want to do. I'm back home, living back home on Bainbridge. I'm doing some yard work for a guy, and I don't know. Couple of weeks gone by, and he says, "You still interested in this radio thing?" And I said, "I don't know. I don't know if I wanted to." Well, Larry Nelson, Morning Man at Como, is a good friend of mine. I could set you an interview up if you want. And I went, "What? Right? Really?" All of a sudden, I was excited again and felt that, okay, yeah, I really do need to follow up on this. So let's find out. But I didn't have an air check because the RF was so bad you couldn't record yourself. And so I had nothing. And so here, keep in mind, I'm still puking, okay? And so I call up KUOW, and I beg to use their studio. I tell them I've got an interview with, you know, Larry Nelson, and I don't have an air check because, oh, then you know that. And they go, no, we don't, no, you can't, sorry. And so I begged them again, and I begged them again, and about the fifth time, they said, okay, you can do that. So, great. So I'm in their studio, one of their studios, and I'm putting this air check together, and everything's going great, I think. And all of a sudden, somebody comes in and says, "What'd you do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." Anyway, I hit some button or some switch or something. I did it twice, took them off the air.
Oh, man. Oops.
I still don't know what I did. So anyway, I go see Larry, and Larry, you're waiting for the bullshit detector to... you know, to pop up and, you know, he's just filling me full of stuff that he thinks I want to hear, but I could tell he was sincere. He's a sweetheart of a guy, or was a sweetheart of a guy. And he spent about a good half hour with me and all this stuff. And he really got me pumped up and excited that I could probably do this. So on the way back, I'm going back to Bainbridge now. That walkway between First Avenue and, you know, it's a passenger walkway to the ferry. I was on that, and I stopped and looked, and I'd never seen this before, and I have no idea why I had never seen radio show broadcast training. Never seen it before. I walked in, and I immediately meet Casey Summers, who was the first female jock on KJR doing Top 40, and I was then introduced to the person who owned it, and he took my tape and said, "I'll be right back." So I'm sitting there talking to Casey, and Casey was excited because I knew who she was. You know, she was that new to radio. She said, "Oh, wow, I found somebody who knows me."
Yeah, Casey's a friend and just a great person.
Yeah, right. So anyway, the person who I'd given my tape to walks out and says the same thing Larry Nelson said. It's got to be something to this. Anyway, that person that I handed my tape to was John Maynard. Yeah. He and Charlie Brown owned radio show broadcast training. Oh. And basically, it was just a farm to get your first phone, which you needed for the FCC. Really, if you're starting off, you have to have a first phone because you're going to be stuck in the station by yourself doing overnight weekends and things like that. So... got my first, and I went to school with John Posey, Casey, Tom Hutler, and Bob Case. We were all getting our first phones at the same time. Anyway, it took me a month to get over the pukes, or to hear the pukes, and it took me another month to get over it.
So, and I'm sure Charlie and John helped you out with that, too.
John's was a great coach.
Yeah.
Great coach. He'd just tell you a little bit here and there and then leave you to be and come back and listen a little bit. And he was just a very subtle teacher. Very, very good.
All right. So you get your first phone, which you had to have for the directional antennas and, you know, stuff like that, to be kind of, to be alone at the station, I guess. Then what's the path? Are you back with Larry Nelson? Are you talking to him, or Charlie and Maynard kind of point you toward KJR? How'd you get to JR?
Well, I was doing discos for a little bit up in, I guess that was the beginning of disco era. So we're talking like 75, yeah, 76. I did those in Marysville. And I had applied to KRKO, and I got hired to do weekends at KRKO. And I thought that might be a good thing to do and for a while and see where it goes. Anyway, I was doing quite well and promised a full-time gig when one opened up. And, you know, 3 months later, something opened up, and he didn't give it to me. So I resigned. I said, you promised, and apparently you're not good at your word, so I don't want to work for you. I won't tell you who that was, but anyway, I left there, and then
I might know. I might know.
What's that?
I might know who it was.
He went on to work for Cairo.
Oh, man.
So anyway, I enjoyed that at the time, but I still obviously wanted something better. But I needed tapes made, and Charlie was supposed to have made tapes of my demo so I could, you know, farm it out and stuff. And he says, oh, I'm sorry, come on by tomorrow and I'll have them ready for you. So I came by the next day, and apparently it was payday. People had to come in and get their checks. And I'm talking to this one guy who had hired me to do discos. Okay. Steve Elliott. He used to say, Steve Elliott. And I car drives by and I say, who's that? He says, well, that's Mark Jeffries. Oh, really? Can you introduce me? So he introduces me to Mark, and Mark invites me to the station because I got to get my tapes anyway. And so Mark and I talked for about 3 hours. I couldn't believe I was having a conversation with somebody who, on KJR, and I'm talking radio, and I'm just going, I don't know how I'm keeping up with him. Or maybe he's just telling the stories and I'm just listening. Whatever way it was a long period of time. Tracy Mitchell walks by. He goes, hey, Trace, come here. I want to introduce you. Introduces me, and he says, oh, here's one of his tapes. So that night, Mark invites me to the Benbow Inn for a few drinks with Joe Michaels, Rick Hansen, and Don Patrick. Here I am, you know, sitting around talking radio and stuff again. I'm not sure why I'm doing that, but there I was, and happy to be there. And Rick was program director of KTAC at the time, and says, I'm looking for a weekend. Anybody know anybody? And Mark grabs one of my tapes and hands it to him. And so by that weekend, I was working at KTAC for Rick.
And, love it. Love it.
Yeah. But so I was there for about 3 months, and I get a call from Tracy Mitchell. And Tracy says, if I offered you a job on KJR, how soon could you be here? And I said, as long as it takes me to drive there. And he says, well, I'm waiting for this guy to screw up one more time, and I'm pretty sure he will. And let me give you a call back when that happens. So it only took about a week, and Tracy called. And I was thrilled to be there. I could, you know, I was in the old control room of KJR, which looked east. Well, both of them looked east, but it was on the east side of the building. And I couldn't believe what it looked like, okay? So you've got this thing in your head, this picture of what you think the radio station, the actual physical control room looks like. And in this place is a dump. I mean, there's a stack of wires behind the board about, you know, 2 feet, just a rat nest of wires. You've got this old board, and you've got, you know, these turntables, and the fuzz is all worn off of them because you had to slip cue all your records. And and the same microphone, this RCA microphone.
Yeah, yeah, the 77DX.
And you're just going, oh my gosh, this is incredible. I'm sitting in the seat and I'm going to say KJR. It's going to come out of my mouth. Holy smokes. I don't know if I can do it. You know, somehow you do. I remember the first time I was on Como, that came a little bit later, but I was wondering if I was going to ever say KJR. I thought maybe I would. And saying Como was something, too. I thought, KOMOs. But KJR was just a thrill and a half. So anyway, I did that for, a couple of years. And in the process of that, I learned production because Steve West, the program or general manager at the time, wanted to offer the music industry a different form of interviews and things rather than bringing the artist into the control room. And the jocks didn't really know much about the artist anyway. And who knew what time it might be? And do you want to schedule with Tracy? Well, that may not be available. I mean, you have a live show to do. So I had a lot of flexibility. And I did a show called Words and Music. It was an hour long. So with the artist, most of the artists, I would have about an hour with them. And so putting the show together, I was using a 4-track tape recorder. That was pretty, sophisticated for its time. And putting the show together and doing these interviews. So I was doing that along with doing weekends and fill-in and just a full-time utility person. I was full-time, but I did everything. And I was thrilled to death to do it all. I mean, I loved it. It was the best job. I did stuff that nobody wanted to do. They didn't want to do remotes. They didn't want to do this. They didn't want to do it. I'll do it, you know, and just had a great time.
And talking about the words and music, some of the artists, I was looking over a list here from Ian Matthews to Arlo Guthrie, Player, the late Harry Chapin, Merrily Rush, of course, and the Turnabouts, Michael Murphy, Eddie Money, the Money Man. I mean, yeah. That's just a tip of the iceberg. Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys, Toto. Give me several that really stood out for you.
Billy Joel, Charlie Daniels. Charlie walks in and he's huge. You know, he's just tall and he's big and he's got this great voice and he's got this big, gigantic cowboy hat and he's got it laying on the counter on its side. And I pick up his cowboy hat and I almost put it on my head as I say, now, this is what you call a 10-gallon hat, isn't it? And I just about put it and I didn't put it on my head. Thank you.
Yeah.
And laid it back down. And he says, well, I don't rightly know what a 10-gallon hat is. Yes, but I don't, it's just, it's my hat. he was great. Nicest guy in the world.
Okay, what about Billy Joel?
Well, Billy was great, too. To spend a whole hour with somebody, and really hear the whole Piano Man story coming from the Piano Man himself was really fun. And, of course, he grew up with in Long Island area. And if I remember right, am I mixing him up with Harry Chapin?
No, that's him. He was at Bedford Stuy, somewhere like that.
Yeah, right. So just to hear how his career was really taking off. And the Piano Man had been out for 2 or 3 years. So, he had a few more albums under his belt. But he still wasn't the major star that he definitely became. But yeah, that was fun. Dennis Wilson was a blast. I mean, that was a 2-hour interview right there. Michael Martin Murphy now, but Michael Murphy did the song Wildfire. Do you remember the movie A Man Called Horace? With Richard Chamberlain? And in there, Richard Chamberlain takes his peyote and he does this marriage ceremony.
Yeah.
They take the over a fire pit, they take these long ropes and on the end are these claws that go into your armpits and they raise you up and they spin you around while you're on peyote around this fire pit. That was his wedding ceremony. That's how he got married.
What?
Yeah, to hear him tell the story, it was just wild.
Oh my God.
Just wild. Yeah. Meatloaf was another good one. And Meat, we just lost him.
Yeah.
He had a concussion when he was a kid. Major one. He was in track. And he used to throw the shot put. And he was out picking up the shot put. And somebody yells, Meat, look out! And bam, it shot him. Hits him right in the head.
Oh, man.
Knocks him out cold. And, hey, Meat, get up. And I don't know if his name was Meat at the time. But anyway, he staggers up and everything. Yeah, I'm okay. And takes a couple steps and falls again. And this time hits his head on the metal stake, for the marker. Well, he was so debilitated. He was home, but they could not have anything that made a sound. His parents used to fight, so they had to split up for a while. And phone couldn't ring. The doorbell couldn't ring either. And they had to disconnect all that stuff. And it took him about 2 weeks before he, get a census back again. But, he's a wild guy. He is just wild. In fact, we went to 13 Coins for dinner with a few other radio people and stuff. And he just about got us thrown out of it. was so loud. So loud and funny.
Oh, just like a bat out of hell.
Well, yeah. You know, you see him perform. That's his personality right there. Wow. I mean, he's just go, go, go all the time. Fun interview.
And, you know, here's some of the groups who were hot during that time. Certainly Kansas, Styx, Doobie Brothers, for sure. You did all those. And that must have just been just a blast for you to connect like that, get to go out to dinner with some of these folks. So let me ask you, you're at KJR, you're walking the hallways before the new control room on the other end of the building. So what's the dynamic like? I mean, you're working with guys like, you know, Icky, Charlie Brown. I mean, where do you even start to... you know, kind of characterize the feel and the dynamic of the radio station.
You know, I guess I was in awe. I was in awe of anyone who worked at KJR because that's the station I grew up listening to primarily. KOL wasn't around when I was looking for work, so it had already folded. But KJR was still the king. You know, it had Pat O'Day. Come on. Mm-hmm. So then it had Tracy Mitchell and Mark Jeffries and Gary Lockwood and Ichabod wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. Charlie Brown, Joe Michaels. You know, those are some pretty heavy-duty players there. So I don't know. I just tried to fit in. I tried not to be, you know, go against the grain. Everybody was so nice. They were. Maybe I didn't come in the way other people had, you know, through KJRB. And, you know, I'm just a guy off the street. And here I am staying there quite a while. I was there for 15 years at KJR, so... So a lot of things changed in those 15 years, for sure. But that original staff that I worked with, I think, was the strongest. You know, with Charlie in the morning and Charlie Brown and Lockwood in the afternoon. Of course, just watching Lockwood live doing police blotters was hilarious.
with Chet?
Yeah, with Chet. Chet was the best. Yeah.
All right. One of the biggest promotions, one of the major promotions KJR had, and I'd like to talk, and we'll play a sample here in just a little bit, Clem, about the Stewart Street Money Mysteries. Where did that come from? How did you even approach putting this really radio drama to life?
Well, thank you for giving me credit for that. It wasn't actually me. It was a Steve West idea, okay? And... He had a friend called by the name of Jerry Jacobson, who was a writer, mystery writer. And he threw the idea at him. Could you write X amount of mysteries and make them this length, two and a half minutes? Mm-hmm. And he swore up and down he couldn't do it. He said, well, just write one and maybe a couple and see how it goes. So he did. And, could you write like 50 more? And I don't know how Steve talked him into it, but he did. And Jim Campman was production director at the time, okay? And this is when I was still doing Words and Music. Anyway, Campy starts off finding the talent, which was Pat Fraley as Stewart Street and John Aylward as the announcer and Sergeant Bragg. And, of course, they did basically all the characters, including women. They were just amazing and still friends of mine today. And so Campman put all the music together, found the right music, the whole presentation of what the Stewart Street mysteries were going to sound like. So the template was all there. And at about mystery number six, Jimmy wasn't at KJR anymore. Uh-huh. And he wasn't fired. He needed to take a leave. And I was called in to fill the shoes. To do that, to continue doing weekends, to continue doing my Words and Music show, mm-hmm. all of that, I was definitely more than full-time because now I was production director, too. So that was a heavy, heavy load.
Well, you know, Clem, let's drop the needle on this. I got a Stewart Street Money Mysteries promo and then one of the episodes. So let's drop that in right now.
A mind that is inquiring without too much perspiring can be financially inspiring by solving the Stewart Street Money Mysteries. Show us your inquiring mind.
Hey, Stu, ever wonder how they get the bones out of clams?
Don't be afraid to ask questions.
How come you never hear who won the submarine races off of Alcon?
The Stewart Street Money Mysteries, starting Monday on KJR Seattle.
KJR Seattle, Channel 95.
Bandit Roderico Gonzalez had made a daring play by robbing 7 gas stations in one day across the state. Lieutenant Stuart Street, ace Seattle crime fighter, had been dispatched to haul in the bandit.
According to his record, he just got out of Walla Walla.
But street sources proved useless. No one knew where Roderico had gone off to, except that he had fled town while the going was good.
Looks like I'll have to do a little long-distance tracking.
Street finally got a break when he found that Roderico's brother, Phil Gonzalez, lived in an apartment building downtown. Street drove to the building, and after finding no one at home, called on the apartment manager.
Excuse me, I'm looking for one of your tenants, a Phil Gonzalez in 417.
Looking for the dirt ball, huh? Not home again. Well, you'll find that scum bucket down by that park in the market.
Say what?
That park next to Carter's. You'll see why. He's a dirt ball, all right.
Street drove to the park, and in the southwest corner found Gonzalez leaning against a fence and drinking from a bottle in a paper sack.
I could have been a star.
A star?
I could have been.
Well, that's fascinating, Phil. I'm looking for your brother.
Stinking sister.
Stinking
brother.
Sister. What?
I could have been. Oh, downtown. Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson?
Ed McMahon.
Ed
Peacock. Oh, yes, could have been with them.
Phil, where is your brother?
In Walla Walla.
No, he's not in prison anymore.
No. Yeah. You want a slug?
No, I don't want a slug. Here, thanks, Phil. Here's a fiver for shaving cup of coffee.
Gracias. Keep the change.
What? Does Street know where he can find himself a Roderico or as a bandit at large in gibberish?
Clem, that is some amazing stuff. That had to be like just a big listener draw. I remember listening to them and going, well, I'm at my destination, but I can't turn my car off yet. I got to finish listening. You know?
Good. It worked.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah, it was, sometimes we'd have, during contest hours, which was like, I don't know, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., and sometimes we'd have a winner back-to-back, and I didn't have the next one produced and ready yet.
Wow.
I had a full day. I never missed it. And sometimes the jock goes, well, that's close enough, and they'd give it to him, and I just want to punch him and say, what the heck did you do? That's not the right answer. Well,
close enough.
Right. So there I was back at the studio trying to get another one ready for air.
Part 3 with Clem Daniels on the radio conference call coming up. Including
cheap drinks, best view of Seattle.
All for you on the radio conference call.